Does God give us an example of friendship as a model for human beings? Friendship with a Father whom we cannot see, and a Son who lived among us? Hello, I'm Alden Thompson. Welcome to Probe. Today we're going to be talking about friendship in the larger setting of religion in relationships. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, and Aline Bauer, Visiting Instructor in Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, let's dive into that question. Friendship with God, friendship with Jesus, relationship with Jesus. Is that something that's so mysterious that it cannot provide a model for the rest of us? I'd like to start with that question. To what extent does our relationship with God, relationship with Jesus, help us in our other relationships? Any of you have any wisdom on that?
Well, you know, I find this a fairly challenging subject because, to me, friendship is the growth of a bond between equals in many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, although it can be to some extent a growth between people of different stations in life. And so, you know, to talk about friendship with God is to create in my mind a considerable challenge because of God's omniscience and omnipotence and his eternal nature. And I don't see this as detrimental. I see it as an offer of a great privilege. But I think we should be careful not to think that God is ever going to become a buddy like the buddies I had when I was in my growing up years or even that I might have now.
What would you do from a pastoral point of view if someone whose human relationships had just all gone south, but they say, but at least I have a good friend in Jesus. Mm. Would you just let that lie, let them find the consolation?
I would never speak against that kind of consolation, but my point is a narrow one. This friendship is not a friendship of equals. Mm-hmm. It's a friendship of very distinct beings. And in some ways, I don't know how else to characterize it. I think in some ways that God's friendship toward us is a condescension of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
For us to be invited to be God's friend or Jesus' friend is quite an invitation.
Probably the parental model works better there, where he's our father and we know we're not below there as children. Let's go to a biblical example of friendship. Such an amazing one. David and Jonathan. Here you have the crown prince who would have been in line to be king. Simply turning self-effacing and willing to give everything up for his friend David. How in the world do you explain a friendship like that?
It's incredible, isn't it?
I find it just amazing.
Yes.
But isn't that what friendship does, though?
Looks out for the best of the other person.
I think friendship focuses not so much on the vast differences, but on the commonalities.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a bond between people. A great deal. I remember reading of a friendship between two ministers. One was from a wealthy suburban church, and he was an Anglo-American, and the another one was from a very poor inner-city church, an African-American. And the two of them decided that they were going to work hard at becoming friends, and a great bond grew between them that proved to be a great blessing to them, but their life experiences were very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
See, and the friendship was a struggle for a while because they had a number of very significant and deep-seated issues that they had to work their way through. But having done that, the bond of friendship became very dear. And
well,
I think that's what people are looking for.
But I have a question then. Can we pick someone out and say, I want to form a bond of friendship with that person, or does the bond of friendship just naturally happen?
Well, my answer to that would be yes, because I think it can happen both ways.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that the ones that happen naturally are the most, you know, they require little to no mm-hmm. work and are very enjoyable. But the ones that require a lot of work can grow and become very significant.
Very meaningful.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
they can.
You know, C.S. Lewis talks about the first friend and the second friend. He says the first friend is where you share common interests, common likes and dislikes, and he says it's just like two drops of water flowing together, you know, on a pane. But the second friend, he says, where you have the same interests, but you disagree about them all.
Oh, yeah.
You've read all the same books, but you've gotten a different thing out of the wrong.
That's good.
And then he says, you know, but out of that tussle, mm-hmm. he says, a common bonding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need a variety of friends.
one where a second friend that challenges you.
You know, and there are people that we like to be with that always make us feel good, and they are, that's wonderful. But sometimes the friends that help us grow the most are those who feel safe enough to point out areas in our lives where we may need to grow. And they see a divergence in something we're doing that they can call us on. And that is sometimes a closer friendship.
Well, it's actually in some ways a more valuable.
That's terribly important. The next question I'd like to raise here is one which grows out of a New Testament passage, which says, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers." Now, typically that's been applied in marriage relationships, and that makes good sense, not to be unequally yoked. But there is something, this business of being yoked, and yoke is perhaps too strong a word, but I, coming back to this naturally, being drawn naturally to someone, I find, for example, that when I'm eating with someone and we both enjoy the same foods, it's just more fun. You can look at each other and say, "Isn't that terrific?" rather than knowing that the other one is just eating it out of duty. Or seeing a sunset where you both really enjoy it. Sunset's always more fun with someone else. So there should be that natural bonding. Now, why do you suppose, Paul, what's the dangers, what's the attraction of being of an unbeliever? What's he trying to get at here when he says, don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers? What are the dangers, the pitfalls?
Would it make a difference to understand that Paul was writing to people who had just recently been in a pagan lifestyle? They were not people who had been rooted and grounded in Jesus Christ or Christian belief. So was he saying this to protect them? Maybe they weren't mature enough to be able to handle those sorts of relationships. Now, this brings up a good question, because you see Jesus dealing with people. Certainly, he didn't take Paul's advice, did he? I mean, if you were going to say that, how he interacted with people. So would it make a difference where you were in your spiritual journey to how much interaction you could have with someone unlike you?
But see, when I read that text, Alden, I think it has to be primarily focused toward marriage. I agree that it should be. And we can certainly extend that to what you were talking about, Aline. But I think its primary focus is that because marriage is the closest bond that two human beings can develop, that to be inherently or to be at odds over matters of belief. And remember that belief really is something that goes very deep into human experience, is that if your religion is a significant religion, there's very little in your life that's not affected by it.
And that's going back to our discussion several weeks ago when we talked about children. One, I think, of the sadnesses, even if you have resolved the guilt issue of whether or not you're responsible for it, one of the sadnesses is when children turn away from the faith, that there's no longer that shared community.
The bond.
The shared hope, the shared thing, and that's really a tragedy.
And some of the most significant things in your life, you're at odds over, or disinterested. There's no common interest. And so I think that this text is primarily focused on that.
Dave, I remember you telling a story of a man, one place where you were pastoring, a man became a Christian and his family did not follow him. But he felt so bonded to those believers that he would just actually bound up the steps when he came to church because he was so eager to get to be with those people who shared those common things.
And his comment was that every time he left for church, he left a family that did not understand him to make his way to a family that did understand him.
Well, and I think there are people
the deepest, longings of
who can feel closer to that family of believers than to blood family.
Now, let me press this question a bit further. In the epistles, the New Testament, you get quite a list, often a list of people to avoid, don't have anything to do with those. Whereas I don't see anything like that in the stories of Jesus. Jesus could associate with all kinds of people, doesn't seem to be particularly concerned about warning us about that danger. Jesus never invites us to compromise. But I'm wondering if that has to do maybe with the fact that Jesus was a pure soul, and he did not face the same temptations as those of us who may have a zoo of passions that we're trying to deal with. You suppose that might be the case?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a significant element. But I don't think that that those texts should be used to allow us to escape the responsibility of creating friendships that are redemptive. You know, I think the level of friendship has to be governed by the level of common interest. But it is possible to create an initial friendship, even with a person whom you regard as a scoundrel, that it may have a beneficial impact on them. Mm-hmm. Although there is some cost attached, I still think that if many of us who profess to be good Christians befriended the kind of people that Jesus befriended, that we mm-hmm. would face very similar criticisms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Well, there are no questions. People have to ask hard questions about their relationships. I know people, especially who come from a undisciplined background, when they become Christians, they are very much at risk mm-hmm. if they place themselves in certain settings or with certain people. And we run a great danger if we ignore mm-hmm. those concerns on their part.
Well, and I had a student recently ask me, Alden, you know, I really want to commit my life to Christ and do what God wants me to do, but I want to stay friends with my old friends, but I don't want to go where they go. You know, mm-hmm. what do you answer? How do you answer a student like that? That's difficult, this yearning to remain friends, and yet knowing that the activities that some of these friends are doing will not promote a relationship with God.
Kind of become the designated driver.
Huh? Right. Right.
Well, see, I think those friendships tend to sort themselves out over time. Is that if you just don't do what those people, those other individuals, if you don't do what you used to do, the common bond pretty much disappears.
Mm-hmm. And the issue takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm. It's still a sad thing because you lose those associations.
But it is. Yeah. And then you look at the life of Jesus and wonder how he would have handled that to maybe reach those.
Yeah.
But perhaps we're not there yet or strong enough in the case of this.
Yeah, although I think in all fairness, though, some of the people we have in mind were not really friends of Jesus. They were people with whom he had interactions in passing.
Uh-huh.
His friends were different, you know, Mary and Martha and Lazarus.
And Peter, James, and John.
Yeah, Peter, James,
Jesus
and John.
Naturally selected these three, and one could say favoritism, but your friends tend to be that way.
I don't like the idea of favoritism there, because I think that friendships grow on their own, and where there's a good level of reciprocity and happiness, those friendships should not be criticized by the people. And I don't think that's favoritism. I think that's just the way friendship works.
Well, and if you try to be even-handed with everyone, then you really don't know what friendship is, because there is this natural bond.
And besides, most of us don't have time in life to create deeply bonded friendships with more than a few people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is too
a lot of acquaintances,
intensive.
But not a lot of deep friends.
Yeah.
Now, in the Gospel of John, we have just a few moments left here, but in the Gospel of John, Jesus talks about, I don't call you servants any longer, I called you friends.
Wow.
Hmm.
What about that tension between a servant relationship and a friend relationship? Does that have anything to tell us about human relationships as well?
Well, maybe we could go back to the Jonathan and David story, because we see Jonathan, in a sense, having a servant attitude towards David, even though he was the crown prince.
Mm-hmm. Although that it'd be hard to be servant. It's a self-giving like you find described to Jesus.
Mm.
He emptied himself.
Yeah.
Now it's a very natural and very spontaneous thing. Yeah. So, but that is a remarkable verse there.
It's a remarkable invitation, actually.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's an incredible invitation. Well, I would like to thank you two again, Aline and Dave, for helping out in our discussion. Next week, we leave the area of friendship and go to religion in the workplace. That should be interesting. Our conversation partners will be the same. My thanks to Jeremy Erland, our program engineer, all of you for listening and for Probe. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.